Hello everyone, and welcome to not another podcast, Castlevania, the companion episode. So, my name's Andy Godoy, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mr. Jonathan Keane. How you doing, buddy?
Mate, it's good to hear you back on the sound waves, you know, airwaves, as it were. You know, it's been a while.
Yeah, so, quickly, before we start recording, John, and telling everyone about the show itself, a little bit about us then. So, myself and John, you know, we... Well, I used to record with the RGDS podcast. John still records with those guys, and you guys do an amazing job. And you know what? I've missed talking to John, so we've decided to start recording again. What better subject about, you know, Netflix's, you know, Castlevania, which is an amazing animation. And we're going to talk about episode one. But before we do that, John, why don't you tell us a little bit about your Castlevania history, and, you know, before we go into the first episode?
Well, I mean, everyone who is a retro gamer knows and loves Castlevania, right? For probably all the right reasons, but there's obviously a couple of wrong reasons in there as well, right? I remember, you know, like some of those games were notoriously difficult. Typical 8-bit games, you know, could be a little bit cheesy and cheesed you off, but they were staple games of my childhood growing up. Like I said, I never had access to Nintendo growing up, but all my friends did, so I was around the house all the time playing it. Castlevania 1 and 2 and Simon's Quest and all that, Game Boy. But for me, personally, the greatest Castlevania game for me was Symphony of the Night on the PS1.
Right.
Oh, mate, it was just, even that, it's just the music, the gameplay's fantastic. It really captured the essence of, like, the gothic, you know, like the castle, the Dracula, and everything about it was just fantastic. And when I heard that when Netflix were going to do a series, I knew they were going to do it justice. I knew, like, Netflix don't muck around, you know, they big budgets, you know, they bring in all the talent, and it was, I was impressed by it. Definitely.
Okay, I mean, before we talk about the animation, I just want to give you a little bit about my history. So, Castlevania has been going now for God knows how many years, over 20 plus years perhaps. You know, it was on the NES. It even appeared on the Commodore 64. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, John. It was original Castlevania on the Commodore 64. It looks alright, sounds alright, but most people are familiar with it on the 8-bit Nintendo. Now, I've got to confess, I was never a big fan of Castlevania 1 and 2 on the Nintendo Entertainment System because they're really, really tough. And it's all about the Belmont family sort of trying to defeat Count Dracula, you know. And they're just really, really tough. They remind me kind of like the Mega Man games.
Mm. But I've heard that... I think it might have been Matt Lamborn. He was telling me that the Game Boy Advance has got some absolutely corking Castlevania games, and I've never played any of them. Like
Aria Sora, mate.
Apparently they're absolutely top notch.
It is amazing. So, I mean, let me tell you my favorite Castlevania games, and Aria Sora, John, I've got to mention, you've got to play with it. It's one of my favorite games ever in recent times, but I really got into Castlevania, like most, I think, on the Game Boy, but I wasn't that impressed. For me, what really got me hooked was Super Castlevania 4 on the Super Nintendo. Mm. And that was just a game that wowed. That game really made the 16-bit Nintendo sing. And what I loved about that game, I never knew this up until I started talking to Darren McCade, who runs ABC Starts, and he's a huge Castlevania fan. That literally is Castlevania. It's like a remake of the original Castlevania, but just done with fancier graphics. I had no idea about that.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to get a copy of this? It's like,
I've owned two or three different times, and obviously since then I always get rid of stuff, and I've got rid of it a bit. I'm sure it goes for quite a bit now.
I'll be happy to part with good money to buy this on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, it's worth it.
I would, mate, seriously. I mean, there's some games you're just like, yeah, whatever, but this on the Super Nintendo, if I saw it out there in the wild, I would happily, for a reasonable price, pay good money for it. I mean, I'm not talking ridiculous money, like when you go to these fairs and someone's selling it for, like, Zelda's, like, oh, yeah, £160, £170. Like, hey, do me a favour, mate, come on. You know what I mean?
No, but this game, I think, is worth every penny. And when you think about it, though, the original, when it did come out, I think I got it on import, I think it was about £60. And then I eventually got it a little bit afterwards for about £30 or £40, you know, like the PAL version. But this game did it all graphically. The introduction, the music, the atmosphere, it is so epic. And it's one of those games that at first it doesn't wow you that much, but as you start going into the game itself, the graphics get better, it uses Mode 7, the music gets creepier. It's so full of atmosphere, and that last boss battle is epic.
I've played it, but I've not played it like thoroughly. Like, I've sat down in a couple
really?
Hours.
Wow.
I don't know why, mate. I just never.
Do it.
But I played it.
To quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, do it now, do it now.
Weird. So I might have to get involved in that, yeah. Yeah, does the Castlevania game come with the Super Nintendo Mini?
I think it might do, actually. If not, it's a major crime if it doesn't. But that was my favourite, and I knew there was a Rondo of Blood. There was another Vampire's Kiss on the Super Nintendo, I believe, which is like it's meant to be like Rondo of Blood, but really cut down to a certain extent. But
I like Rondo of Blood. I played that on the PSP.
Yeah, I played Rondo of Blood on the, you know, like modded Xbox, because they've actually got it there, and I finally got to play it, and it's a great game, very, very tough. And a lot of people sort of prefer that as a favourite Castlevania game, but I'm with you, John. Symphony of the Night, playing that on the PlayStation 1, that really made me fall in love with Castlevania. It took 2D gaming to perfection, and it really just made me like the characters because, you know, you played Alucard, the son of Dracula, and, you know, you got to try and defeat your dad. And it's...
Multiple endings, multiple paths... You know, great game.
Some of the greatest music ever. And I've got to say, John, Aria of Sorrow on the Game Boy Advance, you've got coin-ups, John. Give it a go. It is one of the greatest games. It's up there with Symphony of the Night. That's how good this game is. It's amazing.
See, I've got a Game Boy Advance, and I played it quite a bit when I was travelling around the world when I was going. So I just brought one in the airport, and it saved me on some of those long journeys.
Mm.
I've still got it, but for some reason, for life, I can't find any of my games. So I was thinking, maybe I should start, you know, collecting for the Game Boy Advance. But I don't know how expensive the Game Boy Advance games are.
To be honest, John, it's up to you. I don't know if you're sort of the person that will collect games in box, or whether, you know, because you can get these games cheap on eBay, but they might not be the original game. They might just be the cartridge, but it's just another cartridge.
I don't mind that. I mean, for the Super Nintendo, I'll try to, I can, to get it complete.
Yeah.
And the Master System, but for something like the Game Boy, I don't mind it being cards, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I mean, I'd recommend get Aria of Sorrow, but I mean, Castlevania, there's so many different sort of like Castlevania. You've got it on not only the Game Boy Advance, you've got it on the DS, which again, Dawn of Sorrow, it's gaming perfection. It's in many ways, it beats a Symphony of the Night, but then you've got the poorer games, you've got like the games that, you know, that were on the N64 that. That was like at the beginning of 3D, and it didn't work, you know?
It didn't work.
And graphically, they haven't aged that well. You know, the draw distance, you know, the walking animation on the characters, the lack of... And I mean, it's also been on, what was it, a bunch of other consoles, I think, like the PS1 or something. But what we're here to do then is mainly to talk about Castlevania, Netflix's TV show. And how did you hear about this, John? And were you excited?
Yeah, mate. Like I said, when I found out about it, it was literally on advertised on Netflix. It said, Castlevania coming soon. And, you know, anything to do with anime, manga, I love all the Ninja Scrolls, the Fist of the North Stars, and, you know, all that stuff. So that style of cartoon, if you want to call it animation, I love. So Castlevania as well. Oh yes, I love it. So yeah, I just know my friends on it as well. They'll watch it. So, well, how did you find out about it?
Well, I'm not really into sort of like the animes or anything like that. I'm not a big fan of them, but I love Castlevania, and that's the reason why I wanted to watch this. I've only watched one episode, so next week when we record, we'll do episode 2, and hopefully our listeners will sort of like listen to the podcast after they've actually finished watching the episode. But I mean, first of all, John, let's talk about the story. I mean, what actually happens in Castlevania then? How does it start off with? We'll do it in like a chronological order. I mean, if memory serves me right then, so it starts off in this sort of like field, and you've got like all these skeletons and corpses, well, dead people, and you've got this woman walking towards the castle, and it's really atmospheric, you know, really, really creepy, because as far as the eye can see, you've got, like, all these skeletons impaled in spikes.
Yeah, it definitely sets the tone straight away, but it's quite funny. The way I actually found it quite charming, the way it actually started, like, this woman, it set up a nice contrast with the whole overtone of the first episode, you know, like the church's backwards thinking versus science and things like that. So this woman goes and knocks on you can only assume as Count Dracula's castle. Yeah. And, you know, she kind of reprimands him for being rude, and he finds it quite charming. And that kind of endears him a little bit as being kind of like a... He's got character, he's got depth to him, you know. Obviously, he likes her a lot. He's not the ruthless killing machine that, you know, mythology always says about him, and he's got science about him. So you think, hang on a minute, this is not going how I thought it would, you know. And it sets up a nice kind of contrast to the tones in the film, you know.
So that woman that we were just talking about there, her name's Lisa, so she plays, like, the love interest, you know, I don't want to spoil too much, and she enters the castle, Dracula introduces himself as Vlad, and she basically says that, you know, she wants to heal people, and because she's not afraid, John, you know, he says to her, like, you know, you're very different to most people, and she's very outspoken, and just like Dracula, we're intrigued where this relationship's going, because you know this is going somewhere, and she just wants to help people. And I think that happens around 1445, and then it sort of like time skips a little bit to 1475. And this is where, like, Lisa is being burnt at the stake by the bishops and the other religious people and the villagers because they think she's a witch. And I sort of knew that was going to happen because, you know, it was that sort of time where if you tried to do signs and stuff like that, people would assume it was witchcraft.
And I like that. I mean, it kind of... Because I'm not the most religious person, I say I'm kind of atheist-ish. So you could just imagine this actually happened. Like any woman who showed any spark of intelligence or pursuit of science, even men, it was like, I mean, you know, religion's that opened the working classes in those days, wasn't it? It's like the church was everything.
Yeah.
They didn't question religion because it was all they had. They were so poor, but prayed to God for a better life, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just imagine stuff like this happen all the time. To burn her at the stake because she was practicing science, you know, like I said at the start, you know, you sets up a nice kind of, I mean, who's the evil one here, you know, the church or
exactly?
It kind of sets up, you know, there's no black and white, there's no absolutes, you know. Obviously, Dracula goes a little bit overboard, with him, but you know, you kind of feel sympathy for a little bit, you know, but not with his methods, not what he did, but you can understand why he did them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as she's being burnt by the stake, you know, the bishop or whoever he is sort of saying that, you know, she's a witch, this is what's going on, she needs to, like, burn. And she's screaming, saying, you know, please don't punish them, it's not their fault. And I couldn't quite get why she was saying that, John. Like, why weren't they, you know, like why was she trying to appease, you know, like... What was going on?
Probably just because, you know, don't you're a man of science and logic, don't revert to your baser self, as it were. Like, these people don't know any better, you know, like you're saying, religion's all they know, they've just been indoctrinated by the church. Don't, you know, it's like when Alucard tried to stop him and he said, look, go for the person who did this, don't kill everyone. And then Dracula goes, no, what if someone should have intervened and helped. And you're like, the reason why it was well done is because you can imagine this stuff happened all the time. You can visualize it happening, like, you know, like everyone was so scared of the church. It's such a powerful entity in people's lives. It's like, you know.
But it was really well told, John, because, you know, like, at least I'd sort of like tried to give Dracula a bit of humanity. And by falling in love with her, he did discover his humanity. So instead of traveling around with a castle that can transport him anyway, she said, like, travel like a man. So he'd been on his journey, traveling around like a normal man would. That's why it would take him a little bit longer. And then he arrives at this thing, and then he asks this old woman, like, you know, what's going on? And she tells him that, you know, she's been burnt at the stake. And all of a sudden, he just vanishes into, like, a pillar of fire. And
so use true power, don't you?
Exactly, and you can feel his pain, you can see like this hatred building up inside of him. But you know who does the voice of Dracula?
It's someone from Lord of the Rings, isn't it?
Yeah, Graham McTavish. But the reason why that really like appealed to me is that recently I've been playing the Uncharted games, and Graham McTavish voices, I forgot what his name is, the baddie from Uncharted 2, you know, the main bad guy. And he also voices Charlie Cutter in Uncharted 3.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was so impressed. And you might even remember him as well from the latest Rambo film. He was the guy with the goatee, you know, he was giving Sylvester Stallone some grief, you know, on the boat.
Oh, is that him, is it?
Yeah, that's Graham McTavish. So he's been in quite a lot.
I think he also plays the in Preacher, I think he plays the guy in hell. Have you seen Preacher?
Oh, no, I've not seen that.
Oh, get involved, mate. It's fantastic. It's really good.
Oh, I'll definitely have to check it out. But yeah, the quality of the acting in this is amazing. They've got some proper, you know, acting. And I was really impressed by Graham McTavish in this. But yeah, so what happens there then? So, like, you said, he gets really vengeful. He gets this hatred and he wants to punish them. And he appears, I think, in the village. And he basically says, I've got, in 1 year, I'm going to come back and I'm going to sort of cause chaos and havoc. And then it sort of like time jumps a little bit where it's like a year, the bishop's there. They're saying that, you know, like evil always lies, the devil always tells these lies, that nothing's going to, you know, happen, nothing's happens. And then the shit really hits the fan, doesn't it?
Oh, mate, it's not like, oh, this would be like, it's going to be graphic and stuff. And then bloody hell, it's like, they don't muck around, do they? It's like, the gore is good. I mean, not good, but it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty graphic. And I like that, you know, they don't pull any punches.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That's good. I like that about it. You know, they don't muck around. But yeah, like, I love that, the way the bishop's like, oh, we're so in our power. We're protected by God.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you know, it starts raining blood and everyone's like, what's going on? And then Dracula said, look, I gave you a year
to
prepare your armies. I told you, I warned you, but now here comes my vengeance. And he opens up a can of devils and demons. And
I thought you were going to say a can of devils and demon whoop-ass.
Yeah. Oh, he did.
it's really atmospheric, John, the animation, because, you know, like you said, it literally starts from raining blood, it starts going on people's faces, then it gets darker, and then, like, all these demons and monsters start to attack and kill the villagers, and then there's, like, rivers of blood flowing absolutely everywhere, and it's just, it's epic, you know, and you can see, like, the castle in the background, and just, it's really haunting, and this is why I think that they've done it so well, and I'm glad they've done it animation as opposed to a TV series, because it works well the way they've done it, really.
Oh yeah, mate, massively. Like, I was quite disappointed when they only did 4 episodes, though. I was expecting it to be at least 12, but you know, it's kind of whet your appetite, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've only watched 1 episode. You might have watched, like, maybe more, but today we're going to talk about episode 1. And I think episode 1 ends where, like, they're in some people in a tavern and they're talking about what's heading towards them. You know, they're having a bit of banter. You know, big fat guys talking about how the Belmonts should have all been killed. And then, like, this guy turns around and he says, shit. And that's where episode 1 ends. So, what's your review then? I mean, if you were to score this episode out of 5, what would you score it out of 5?
Oh, mate, that's a solid 8.
Mm.
A high 8, you know, it met all my expectations, you know. I mean, straight, no pun, but straight for the jugular, you know, got your attention, you know, no mucking around. And that's exactly what I wanted, you know, really got. Like I said, I was disappointed because I wanted more. And there's only 4. You know, but apparently they commissioned a second season already. When it's going to come out, we don't know. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes on. Yeah, I mean, you're going to love the next episodes, mate.
I cannot wait. It's only 4 episodes. I'm going to try and watch episode 2 a little bit later on tonight. And then that way I've got it sort of in my mind. I'll watch it again next week. And then we'll record on a Thursday again, hopefully, and get this episode out on Friday. So this is my return to podcasting. And I can't think of a better way and a better TV show and a better topic for me and John to talk about. Because, you know, we love the Castlevania games. And the Castlevania games, the history and lore of it, it's all over the place, really, the timelines. Yeah, but I think it's told nicely in this. It's told in a nice way where even non-Castlevania sort of like viewers or fans can watch and pay attention
to
it.
I think this must be, timeline in this one must be quite late, because the way the Belmonts were disgraced by the church, weren't they? That's the way it goes on. I think in the first episode it says that, like you see Trevor, he's all drunk and, you know, he's obviously a fantastic... How far are you into the... I can't remember the first...
The first one ends when Trevor is in the bar and he goes, shit, and that's where it ends. Just very... It left me wanting more, and I can't wait for episode 2.
All right. We can't talk anymore. It gets really good, mate. Seriously. We do another one of these next week. Like, we'll do part 2, definitely.
Definitely. So, yeah, guys... hopefully this will be out on iTunes in a couple of days. I will upload it to Podomatic. But for the time being, I'm going to try and upload it for Friday on YouTube. I'm also going to try and upload it as well on SoundCloud. So guys, please, download it. Leave us an iTunes review because, you know what, it's nice. But again, you know, watch it. Highly recommend it. And with that, I think we should round the show up. So any words you'd like to say then, John?
Mate, welcome back, man. It's good to be talking to you again.
And it's been a pleasure, matey. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, definitely, mate. For real.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. And hopefully you've enjoyed this episode of Not Another Podcast. And we're doing the companion episode of Castlevania.
All right. See you later, guys. See you soon.
Bye.